Dogs seem to know everything about their owners, from their schedules to their scents to exactly what annoys us, or is that just you? I don't know. So shouldn't humans know everything about their dogs? Well, Embark's dog DNA test allows you to do just that. Getting to know your dog's breed mix and genetic health risks with Embark means strengthening your bond with your furry friend. And Embark founded the world's first canine relative finder. I have actually found distant cousins of Geo's. Anyway, we'll get there. They even offer you the ability to connect directly with other Embark dog owners in their database. We'd like to thank EmbarkVet.com for supporting And That's Why We Drink. And you can go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 on the breed and health test with promo code DRINK. So Geo is quite a situation. All right, I got the Embark test done, and he is American Pit Bull Terrier. He is Shih Tzu. He's Australian Cattle Dog, Dachshund Chow Chow, German Shepherd, and Labrador Retriever. He is, as by the way, Embark put it, which made me so happy, he is a super mutt. Isn't that nice? I was thrilled because I had done a test on him ages ago, but it was like pretty simple and like kind of just not very, very in-depth. This Embark test was amazing. It told us that he was part Dachshund, which made a lot of sense because he's kind of like hot dog shaped. Get the dog DNA test that is trusted by millions. Right now, Embark has a limited time offer on their breed and health test for our listeners. Go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 with promo code DRINK. Visit EmbarkVet.com and use promo code DRINK to save $50 today. We all love to treat ourselves every now and then, right? Like go out and buy a nice coffee, maybe get a little extra legroom on the plane. Then why are we always settling for doctors? Your health is the most important thing. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You know how I feel about making phone calls, and that is why I discovered ZocDoc many years ago before I even had a podcast. And so I'm thrilled. This feels very full circle. I use ZocDoc all the time in LA. I still use them here in Cincinnati. It's just such a cool service to be able to put in your insurance and find a doctor for whatever your ailment might be. I actually found an ENT doctor once when I had this sinus infection, probably TMI. But anyway, I love ZocDoc. I've loved it for years. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's how easy it is. Sometimes they even have same day appointments. I know I've gotten some in the past. Go to ZocDoc.com/drink and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/drink. ZocDoc.com/drink.
Okay. I also want to scoot away from the green screen because I'm, like, hitting it.
You want me to?
No, I think you're okay. It's just my dumb head.
Your big dumb head.
I know.
Welcome, everyone, to our show.
Welcome to our show.
It is a podcast. Oh, dear.
Okay, well, it's not a great one.
It is a squeaky one.
How are you? I feel like I've seen you a whole lot lately. Are you doing good?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking at the camera. I thought you were talking to, like, the Blues
Clues.
How
are you, folks?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. We just had our Texas leg.
It was bananas.
Texas is fun, y'all.
I had a blast, especially in Austin. We got in a day early, so I got to go do some fun things.
Oh, you got some BBQ?
I did. I also went, I did like the Museum of Weird and things like that.
Yeah.
So it was fun.
Even I went thrifting and bought a record player. Like, we really did the Austin ate tacos. We had a blast. Texas was a riot. It was one of our longest tours of the longest legs of the tour. So
yeah, but it was fun though.
It was really fun,
and we got to stay in some really cool hotels and Airbnbs. Thank you to Christine for that.
Yeah,
they were interesting. There was one
interesting.
Where
yes,
some of them we couldn't even get into. We spent a half an hour. Uh-huh. We were locked out of our own place.
My bad.
But it was very fun.
It was very
a good
fun.
Time.
And next up, we are going to Sacramento and
San Francisco.
And the San Francisco show is not sold out, and it's at a really cool venue. So please come.
Okay, for the people who have now come to our Texas show, you now know what we were talking about. last week to the people who had come to our other shows. You are now also in the loop of how wonderful the show is. And for the people who are on the fence, like, eh, should I go? Yes, go.
And
you're
going
to be blown away.
People are bringing friends and stuff who don't know the show. And there seem to be, at least, unless they're lying to our faces, which is entirely possible, seem to be enjoying it.
We have only got, I think we've only gotten 100% great comments about the show.
Yeah, well, not until now. Now that you say that, people are gonna.
Okay, don't think you should be the first to say something mean.
Who wants to be the 1%? Come on.
We still have anxiety. But yeah, it's a pretty darn tootin' great show.
Honestly, we're having so much freaking fun. It's so much fun.
Please come. It's so much Please fun. Come. If you're unsure if you should, you should.
And also, one of my closest childhood friends is coming to San Francisco show, so I need you to make me look really neat.
Oh, yeah, that goes out for everyone in D.C. Apparently half my graduating class is coming. I need them to think I'm cool because I certainly wasn't the last time they saw me.
Yes.
So moving on. Oh, also, my dad's coming to a show and he's never seen me perform anything. So
oh, boy. Here comes dad.
I gotta look good.
Did he build his thing for the Super Bowl?
He did. He built something. I still am not unsure about what it is.
Okay.
But he certainly used his hands and tools and made something happen.
That sounds great.
Oh yeah, this was Super Bowl weekend. Mm-hmm. Recently?
Go Chiefs.
Okay. I literally didn't even know it was Super Bowl Sunday until half the things were closed. And I was like, what is going on?
I am just a Chiefs fan by default because my in-laws are from Missouri, from Kansas City, and Blaze's mom is a huge Kansas City fan, and so his whole family was rooting for him, so it was fun. It was fun to root for him. And they won, so yay!
I didn't even know they won until right now. Great! Yep. Good for them.
Also, I want to add real quick, yes, I wrote... Oh, so we made a slight mistake in the last episode.
I made a slight mistake.
Em was talking about Jim Belushi being dead. He's not dead. John Belushi is dead, his brother.
Yeah. To be fair, we knew that going into before we posted the episode, and then everyone Twitter decided to also let us
Did
know.
They?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see it.
Well, I'm probably the only one who got tagged because I was the one who was doing
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah. So I was like,
we've known and we still know, but I'm also not going to go edit and change all the words from Jim to John.
I don't think that we know how to do that actually. So sorry about that, and sorry, Jim, that we called you alive. Please don't sue us. I'm sorry, dead. Please don't sue us.
I hope you are having a great life.
Very alive yes. life. And also the patron of the week is Lacey Brewer. Yay, Lacey.
Lacey Brewer. Didn't we... I remember saying that name recently.
Uh-oh, was that last week's?
I think so, because I remember us thinking that's a great name.
Did I give her two?
I think so. I think Lacey Brewer gets two.
No, the last one was the person from... oh, yeah.
I was like, that's
Lacey,
like really
I'm so
similar.
Sorry, god damn it. Well, Lacey gets two. No, okay, then I'll put the next one. I thought Alina, but that was from Finland, from the one before that.
I see.
Okay, so then today's patron of the week is Kato Raid.
All right,
Kato Raid. Gatorade.
Fun fact, my mom was at school. She went to the University of Florida, and she was there when they were still giving out like the beta samples of Gatorade to the school. Because Gatorade comes from
right.
University of Florida, hence Gatorade. But she remembers trying the very first Gatorade before it became big and popular.
What flavor was it?
I don't know. Probably lemon lime.
Well, Gatorade, this is for you. Happy episode.
Happy episode.
Sorry that we almost gave it away to someone else.
Also, hi, Lacey, again.
Also, hi, Lacey. Thanks again for your support. My bad. I clearly put them in the wrong order. Sorry about that.
It's fine.
And then that's all I have for updates, Em.
I don't think I have any updates.
All right. Well, that's fun for everyone else, I'm sure.
I don't think there's anything to say.
Sweet.
Texas was a blast. Please come to our next shows. Okay.
Please.
And That's Why We Drink is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You won't want to miss Fluid Engine. This is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. And I'll be honest, this is a game-changer. Back when I made the And That's Why We Drink website, I used Squarespace. This was obviously well before they were a sponsor, and we have used them ever since. And it's unbelievable how easy this tool is. If any of us, that's the coolest part, any of us on the team can log in and move some things around, update
update things. We don't need like a dedicated webmaster to figure it out for us because it's so accessible. I love Squarespace. I've made many websites with it before, and it's really easy to get started. You can get one of their Squarespace professional website templates to use. They have designs for every category and use case. Then you can customize your look, update content, add features to fit your unique needs. It's just a really, really cool service. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/drink to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with Spring Break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like fan fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. New players start playing with just $5 and get 100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code ATWWD to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
So my story, I've been holding off for a long time because I thought that I was going to really need to do some intense, serious research, and it was going to span across several episodes.
Oh my.
Because I was going to get so into the research of it. And I think, I don't know why at one point I worked it up in my head that it was going to be such a massive story, because I just did the research and I was like, that's it. So this is only one episode.
Okay.
And the research, yes, took me, I did still do like a lot of research on it. But as I was going through all my notes and like slowly breaking things down, I was like, oh, I'm only going to have enough notes for one episode.
It wasn't like as overwhelming as you thought.
Yeah. I don't know where in time I decided it was going to be this massive haul, but I have been wanting to cover for a while. I know you've wanted me to cover for a while. I know our listeners have requested
what?
It.
What?
So it's the Dyatlov Pass. Yeah. I think that's why maybe I got it so hyped up in my head, because everyone's been asking
for
it.
Yeah, it seems like a big one because it's like such a popular, famous one, but it's,
when I started, I had a lot of notes, so I still thought, oh, this is definitely going to take forever. But a lot of the notes were kind of repetitive, so.
I've been waiting for this. You know, this is one of the first episodes I ever listened to of any podcast was about the Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was like the first or second podcast episode I ever heard.
Well.
On Astonishing Legends, to be clear, but.
So Astonishing Legends has, I wanted to say, has a really good podcast on them, too.
Yay!
But I tried to go off of just the notes on Google. And by the way, they actually, I still don't know if it's Dyatlov Pass or Dyatlov Pass or...
It's Dyatlov.
Dyatlov Pass. Okay. Well, dyatlovpass.com has like pretty much all information you need. Like they keep really intense sources and information. So,
and also the Astonishing Legends one came out years ago. So like, I know there've been updates and things that they've briefly mentioned. So I'm sure there's like updated news.
It'd be really awkward if I didn't have those updated news.
No,
in here.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure. I don't even remember the episode. It's truly like 5 years ago. So I'm ready to relearn it.
So, Dyatlov Pass.
Yes.
I'm never gonna be able to figure it out. Cause
Dyatlov.
In my brain, I know it's a different language, and I don't want to fuck it up. So as I'm saying it, I'm trying not to fuck it up, and therefore definitely fucking it up.
I see what you're saying. Dyatlov.
Dyatlov. Dyatlov Pass. So this happened in 1959, and there were originally 10 students from Oral Polytechnical Institute, which is now Oral Federal University. It's URAL, so I don't know if that's URL.
URL.
Okay. I was going off of other podcasts and information, and they were saying Earl, so I...
Really?
I don't know if they were also guessing.
It's Ural Mountains, I think.
That would make sense to me,
listen,
too, actually.
I might be wrong. I feel like someone called me a mansplainer recently, so I'm just like, you know what, fuck it, I don't know anything.
I mean, please mansplain me, because I don't know what I'm doing.
Well, apparently...
Ural. That sounds more right
sure.
than Earl. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
And Ural Mountains does sound right to me. Okay, so... 9 students, originally was 10 students from the Ural Polytechnical Institute, which is now the Ural Federal University, are going to go on a trekking expedition in the Ural Mountains. Each was an experienced, at least grade 2 hiker, And by the end of this expedition, they were all going to get certified for their grade 3 hiking. So that was kind of the big point of this. To get your grade 3 certification, you had to have traveled like 200 miles to and like have racked up all these miles to be able to have a certain certification. And grade 3 at the time in the Soviet Union was like the highest highest certification you could get. So this was a big deal for them.
Damn.
So their goal was to reach a mountain that was 6 miles north of where this incident actually happened. So they were 6 miles off at the end of the day. But the route that they were taking was going to be a category 3 in difficulty, I think out of 5.
Okay.
And so, fun fact, the reason it's called the Dyatlov Pass is because the leader of these hikers, his last name was Dyatlov.
Oh, okay. Like he was on the trip?
He was the leader of the group.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the members, their names were Igor, I'm going to guess, Lyudmila. There was Rustem, Nikolai, Zenaida. And then there were 2 people named Yuri and 2 people named Alexander.
Oh, perfect. Just double them up.
Yeah. So the official trek begins at the end of January. I'm going to go off of January 27th because the days before that were kind of like, oh, we're driving to the city where we will begin the trek. But January 27th is where they actually begin climbing. And on day one of their trek, one of the people named Yuri decided that they were actually going to abandon ship and leave because they had really bad joint pain. And they also apparently had a congenital heart issue.
Oh, geez.
And so they were like, I'm not going to keep going. So went from 10 students to 9.
Did they start at all or did they just stop before
they had started and he just went back?
Oh, I got it.
So for the next few days, we do know what happened because there were diaries and cameras found on their campsite, but it was pretty much just climbing. And then on February 1st, that's when we don't really know what happens anymore because they had planned to go to a certain area before nightfall and let that be their checkpoint. Mm. And then they were going to set up camp and then continue climbing the next day. But that night, that's when the incident happened. So what they have assumed to be the situation is that a snowstorm came through while they were hiking to their checkpoint. Mm. A snowstorm came through. They got lost and disoriented and ended up going off course by accident. They ended up going further west to the top of the mountain than they planned to. But they had probably inadvertently gained a lot of altitude by going that direction. And so they didn't want to lose the altitude that they had gained, or they didn't want to have to trek all the way downhill just to get shelter for the night to trek all the way uphill again. So they voted to set up camp. And that's pretty much what we think happened, or that's the last information we have. So the mountain that they were on is called Kolat Siakul. It's not in English, guys. I'm so sorry.
I really don't know.
Apparently, the rumor is that it's called Dead Mountain in the language of the indigenous people there called the Mansi.
So it already had that name?
It already had the name Kolat Siakul.
But it was
Siakul.
Like... Yeah.
But it's apparently... The rumor is that that translates to Dead Mountain.
Oh, I see.
Although the indigenous people have said that it actually means Mountain of Swirling Winds. So I think someone was just trying to make the story spookier.
Although swirling winds would probably kill me. So
right
on a mountain anyway.
So they ended up camping or setting up camp in this space where they didn't accidentally mean to be.
Sure.
And so after that, I think the rest of it becomes kind of rumor based or what investigators think happened. Mm. The plan at this point was that the team was going to send a telegram to the sports club where they created this expedition. They were going to send a telegram by February 12th. But by February 20th, when they hadn't gotten any word, relatives started freaking out and they were telling the club, like, we need search and rescue. We need to find out what happened to them because we should have heard from them by now. And the first rescue groups were actually just volunteers and other students that went through the school. And then later, like, the military was called in.
Oh, boy.
But the first group of people were just students and teachers and volunteers.
Okay.
So they start looking, and on February 26th, and remember, the last information we have from their diaries was February 1st. So February 26th, while the searchers are looking around, they end up finding the group's damaged tent.
So 25 days later.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they find it's one of the students that volunteered to search, found their tent. Imagine being a student volunteer and finding this.
Ooh.
Found the group's damaged tent where they had set up camp. And his name, I think it translates in English to Michael, but it's Mikhail. Mikhail?
Sure. So listen, I don't want to make it. I don't know any better.
So he's quoted saying, "Part of the canvas was poking out, but the rest was covered in snow. I used an ice pick lying nearby to uncover the entrance. The tent was half torn down, covered with snow. It was empty, but all the group's belongings and shoes had been left behind." And inside,
and shoes.
Yeah. And inside he had found a blanket, rucksacks, their boots, the route map, official papers, money, and alcohol. So all things that you would not leave behind.
Especially the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the cold and you're like...
Right.
Also, don't they have like a trope that they all love drinking there? So like you would definitely not take the alcohol.
Wait, where are we again? I mean,
the Soviet Union.
Soviet Union. Yeah. I mean, yes, that the vodka. Because
I think it was vodka that they found.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And vodka doesn't freeze, famously. So you would be able to bring that along with you because it would just
stay warm.
Nice and cold. Yeah.
So,
right. Its own blanket.
So they ended up finding all that in the tents. And so they're like, well. Something is wrong here.
They left the vodka.
They left the vodka. Forget the route map that they left. Forget their boots.
The shoes. And
but so once the site was discovered, investigators found that the tent had been... These are some weird things. This is what makes it start sounding more like a conspiracy.
Okay.
So investigators found that the tent... What is wrong with me? The investigators
It does sound like a conspiracy. Oh my God.
And then they turn into demons. Investigators found that the tent had been cut open from the inside, not just unzipped and left.
Cut open, I see.
They had also found 8 to 9 sets of footprints that were leading to the edge of the woods on the opposite side of the path. So they were actually going downhill. So like they would have had to climb all the way back up. But they were going downhill towards the tree line.
Okay.
And they found that these footprints showed that the people were either only wearing socks... Either they were barefoot or they were wearing one shoe and barefoot on the other foot. So
goose cam.
So they apparently cut themselves out of the tent, ignored their shoes, and then were going downhill.
Holy shit.
So between the, or at the edge of the woods, because they saw that they were going to the woods. So they went to go check. And at the edge of the woods, there were remains of a fire. There was also the trees above the fire. There were broken branches at least 5 meters high. So it looked like someone had been climbing, probably to look for the tent.
Interesting.
And then they found 2 bodies, and those 2 bodies were only in their underwear. So they did not even bring their clothes with them to leave the tent. And it's, by the way, sub-zero.
I was going to say February.
February in Soviet Russia.
In mountains.
In Soviet Union. Sorry. It was, I think they said negative 30 degrees Celsius. It was like fucking cold.
What is that in Fahrenheit?
Negative 22 degrees in Fahrenheit. So
just for my own edification.
Sure, just because we're Americans.
I don't know the difference. Yeah, that's horrifying.
Negative 30 degrees Celsius, negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit.
So even just to not be wearing shoes is alone, like...
Yeah.
Like unthinkable.
Unthinkable. I mean, you're definitely getting frostbite. You're definitely getting hypothermia. So 2 of the bodies were found... In their underwear, it's assumed that they were the ones who were either climbing the trees and or making the fire. Mm. Between the tent and the woods, so in that space where they had been walking barefoot, 3 other bodies were found, all at different distances. So they weren't walking together. It's almost like one of them died early on, 2 of them continued the climb, and someone died, and then the third one continued the climb. So they were all like... A couple hundred feet away from each other.
Oh, like staggered.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay.
So it was almost like they kept giving up on each other and like just fighting to get back to the tent.
What the fuck?
They were all also in very weird poses, suggesting that they were limping or crawling in some way back to the tent.
Oh my God.
One of them, of these 3, one had bitten off his own knuckle. One had a long, bright red bruise on the side of her torso as if she'd been hit with a stick or a baton or something. And one of them had a fractured skull.
Holy shit.
It took search and rescue 2 more months to find their other 4 remaining bodies, because remember there was 9.
Right.
And I've only mentioned 5. So there were 4 other bodies they needed to find. It took them 2 more months.
Oh my God.
They ended up finding them in a ravine by the woods, and they were hidden under 13 feet of snow. So
I'm amazed they even were found at that point.
Right.
13 feet of snow. Holy
well, I guess
shit.
The snow used to be taller and it was slowly melting.
Oh, I see.
So over time, it was easier to find them.
Right.
So Of these four bodies, some were wearing no clothing and some were wearing each other's clothing, suggesting what? That as they each died, the people still alive would take the clothes off of the bodies to keep themselves warm.
Oh my fucking god, dude. This is so wild.
One had a fractured skull. Another had a weirdly twisted neck. One had an open wound on his head, and a couple of them had fractured ribs. Their bodies had soft tissue damage, and forensic scientists say that that is from the snow, just general natural decomp. But they're not really sure why, because if it were natural decomp, it would have happened on the entire face and head all at the same rate.
Sure.
But what's weird about it is that it's not even like parts of the body were kind of falling off. It's that only specific parts of their faces were damaged, and by damaged, like, missing.
What?
So, like, one person was missing her tongue, which, like, isn't even on the outside of your Blech. Fucking face.
Blech. Could that be, like, animals eating it?
That's one theory.
Oh, okay.
But they think, so she was missing her tongue and her lips. The tongue looked like it had been ripped out. One person was missing his eyebrows. And two people were missing their eyeballs. So authorities, after all of this, ended up deeming their deaths as hypothermia. Just said all of them died from hypothermia. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense because, again, it was negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit at the time of their death. So, yeah, I'm sure a percentage of their deaths was caused by hypothermia.
Didn't help at the very least.
Right. But another thing that makes it weird is that three of them had severe physical trauma. And that's not included in their death. And those three instances of physical trauma, they all included, which I haven't even mentioned yet, major skull damage and chest fractures that forensic scientists have said are comparable to the force of a car crash, like a massive car crash. But the weird part is that there are no external injuries showing on them. So
what?
All the damage happened on the inside.
So those are just internal, severe internal injuries?
Severe internal
Holy
injuries,
shit.
But no signs of what could have caused it.
Goose cam.
So they think, like, they were saying that something must have caused immense pressure on the inside, almost like they got crushed from the inside or something.
What
like,
the
they don't
frick?
Know how this happened. So what's more weird, like I said, the bodies had no external wounds, but their internal injuries, like, it suggests that they were crushed by something, but none of them were found under a tree or anything.
Right.
And information that was released to the public never once described the condition of their internal organs. They didn't want people to know.
Weird. Shady, shady.
So the official word is that they died because of a, quote, compelling natural force, which was just their way of being able to sweep it under the rug, like, under the guise of anything. So,
oh,
like,
right.
Could have been hypothermia.
Like, nature did it or something.
Yeah. And then once they announced publicly that it was a natural force that caused it, then the investigation and the case files became classified instantly. And the public was banned from the site for several years. No one was allowed near that space.
Years.
And in 2009, the hiker's diaries finally became accessible to the public. Only 2009.
Holy shit.
So that's the only way I think that we know the first half. That they like were even like going into town and they ate some bread. And then apparently one of them, like two of them had just broken up with each other. So it was kind of awkward that they were on the same trip together.
Soup sock.
So the original lead investigator back in 1959, his name was Lev Ivanov. And now 30 years later, more information is becoming public. I'm going to mention that later, but I wanted to say his name, Lev. He's the original investigator because we're going to talk about him more later.
Sure.
But up until recently, and still a conspiracy.
Sure.
People are wondering, why was the tent torn open from the inside? Why did they leave all their belongings? Why were they barefoot? Why were half of them naked? How did they get internal injuries likened to major accidents? Why was the case classified? Where are their eyes? Like, I mean, everything.
Just like, really, really all over the fucking board.
So that's pretty much the whole story. So now I just have theories.
Yes.
So the biggest one that people claim is that there was an avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think that the hikers woke up in a panic. They heard or saw signs of an avalanche mm-hmm. coming. And so maybe snow over the night had blocked their tent entrance. So maybe they had to cut themselves out.
Oh, interesting.
And they weren't clothed well because they had been sleeping. But also, in my mind, it's like, if you're sleeping in the tundra, essentially, like, you will have clothes on, if you're sleeping.
Hey, well, two of them had just broken up. Maybe there was some making up they were doing.
Maybe in the one tent they all shared.
Listen, there's vodka involved. You never know.
That's true. Body heat is important.
It's a vodka blanket.
So, a vodka blanket.
Everyone's under the vodka blanket.
Everyone's cozy on the inside. So, they might not have been clothed because they were sleeping, or sleeping together, apparently.
I'm just joking. I don't think they were sleeping together. To be clear, I don't want anyone to yell at me.
Then they think they must have then ran to the tree line to be safe from snow that might fall from the avalanche.
Sure.
But maybe they could stand behind trees and the snow wouldn't hit them.
Sure.
And so they accidentally got split up in their panic. And so some made a fire. Some just tried to get back to the tent. And those in the ravine had gotten swept away from the actual avalanche and buried in snow.
Okay, got it.
So some of them found a fire. Some of them tried to go back to the tent. Some of them ended up in the ravine because snow actually did sweep them away.
Do you think they got, like, swept up in the blizzardy type weather and, like, couldn't stay together, maybe?
Maybe. Or maybe, I think that visibility was, like...
Right, okay. So it was hard to, like, keep...
They couldn't see each other.
Right.
So I think they all knew to run to the tree line and weren't together.
And then got split up. Okay, got it.
So... The issues with this are that there are no signs of an avalanche that happened in that area.
That would be a big one.
There's
then.
Like no pattern or debris or any sign of a massive snowfall.
Okay, well then that changes things.
Also that the bodies in the water would have been swept much further away and under a lot more snow than just 13 feet after a couple weeks. Also the tree lines would have been damaged. I mean, if it was a real avalanche, the trees wouldn't fucking be there.
Sure. If it crushed them to death, right, you'd think it, yeah.
And also, since 1959, there have been over 100 more expeditions to the area with no reports of avalanche signs. So it's unlikely because it's not statistically a place that there's a lot of avalanches.
Right.
And apparently there's new updated terrain science. I'll never understand
that.
Apparently,
sounds very
they
smart.
Pay attention to like the slope of the... I tried understanding it. I didn't.
It's like, tell me everything.
There was like three big factors where they could figure out the probability of avalanches. And they said that area specifically will always be incredibly unlikely.
That is really cool that they can do that.
I had no idea. And the hikers, they were all there to get their highest certification in hiking.
True.
Like they would have known the signs of an avalanche and they would have known the signs of a place that likely has avalanches and they wouldn't risk spending the night there.
And also I think they'd probably, I mean, you might get into this, but like you'd think they'd know like the protocol of
like staying together. Yeah, like don't just flee. Also
put
wear
your
a jacket.
Shoes on. Grab your shoes or something.
Grab the vodka. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they were, you know, pretty much incredibly naked and they just like scattered, like there should be
so
at least like a hand holding there. Like wrap each other up with some rope
this
or something.
This is how M does emergency protocol.
Without any
hold hands, everybody.
Listen, without any emergency protocol awareness, I at least know buddy system.
Truly, we're holding hands and so... I'm holding vodka, and that's our emergency protocol.
Christine's my buddy and vodka's her buddy. We're all holding hands.
We all need someone.
So
a warm vodka blanket.
The weird thing about it too, the part that makes it more mysterious, is that footprint patterns show that when they all left the tent, none of them ran in a way where their footprints are consistent with someone in distress.
What?
So,
ew, that just freaked me out.
Footprint patterns show that all 8 to 9 of them were walking at a very normal, lax, easy pace.
That gave me, like, big creeps.
So whatever did happen, if it was an avalanche, obviously you'd be running for the fucking hills.
You'd think so.
But they weren't running. And that becomes a big factor in a lot of these theories of, like, well, whatever happened that caused them to flee in a panic... They certainly weren't running like it. So that becomes a big factor.
It's chilling almost.
Yeah. So it's almost like they all casually just left.
Naked.
Naked.
What the fuck?
Another big theory is that there were fall winds on the mountain that would have created denser air near the tent and they wouldn't have been able to breathe. So they would have had to leave.
Oh.
Apparently that's how in 1978, a group of Swedish hikers actually did die from fall winds. And the topography of the mountain that they were on when this happened is very similar to the mountain that
interesting.
This group of hikers was on. So they thought that might be a thing, but it's really, really unlikely. But the theory is that it would have forced them out of their tent and they would have had to go seek shelter and food somewhere. But then again, like you would have at least grabbed a jacket.
So it's like lack of oxygen or something?
Yeah. Again, I tried to learn about terrain science last night and it sounds like the... it's almost like I'm going to fuck it up and someone's going to tweet me. And
a terrain scientist. Oh, please be gentle on us.
I don't know what Listen, this is the best that I could figure out at midnight. So whenever a fall wind on a mountain is because the mountain slopes.
Okay.
The wind on top is a lot colder and not as dense. And then because it's flowing down the mountain, it becomes more dense, like more energy builds or something. I don't know what's going on.
And you can't breathe at the top or the bottom?
You can't breathe at the bottom.
Got it.
Because it gets more dense and it's more... it's less dense on the top. I don't know. I don't know about fall winds.
Okay, no, I just...
Stop, Christine!
Sorry. I didn't ask you! I was just saying, is it lack of oxygen?
I think it's lack of... Or there's like... Yeah.
They just can't breathe.
They can't breathe, period.
Okay, all right.
That's all I know.
Sure, okay.
Guys, listen.
Listen.
I'm not a meteorologist or a terrain scientist. But so, in theory, they would have not been able to breathe and they would have had to leave. But then why were they walking so calmly? Why did they not have their clothes? Why didn't they at least put shoes on? Like, no matter how much air you can't breathe, you can at least grab your shoes to put them on later.
Or you can run.
Or you can run.
If you can't. Yeah, this is wild.
So another theory is that all this was caused by infrasound. So, which is a very low frequency that we can't hear, but apparently our body will react to it. And so they think the way that the wind was going around the mountain created a vortex called a Karman vortex street. And apparently those produce infrasound that induces panic in humans.
What?
So they think that the hikers would have been driven out of, not only out of their minds, but they would have like fled the tent in distress thinking that something wrong was going on.
Oh, so it makes you what, like paranoid or something?
It makes you apparently freak the fuck out. Holy like you shit. Feel like dread. It, like, convinces you that you need to flee the area.
And it's just a sound that does that?
Right.
Wow.
That's
kind of scary that you don't even know you're hearing it and it's doing this to you.
It's like a white noise, but, like, a different frequency where, like, it makes you feel a certain way.
Does that
way.
Happen in the world? Like, is there, like, in other places? Do we know?
Maybe.
That's really scary. I'm like, am I in that?
Can maybe. I know different types of, like, I know white noise is only one type of noise, but you're then right. There's, like, brown noise, pink noise, and all of them actually make your body react a certain way. So I think based on frequencies, this also does that.
Interesting.
So the injuries after the fact, because they could have, like, freaked out, ran away. That would have explained why they didn't have an emergency protocol, because they weren't in their right minds. They would have ran away, and then at the point that they were far enough away from the frequency, they would have kind of regained their sanity and realized they were lost.
Oh, shit.
And then maybe they could have sustained those other injuries from, like, falling down the ravine because they trip or something and then, like, land on the rocks. And that would be the intense crash internal damage. But their footprints don't suggest that they were in a panic.
Right.
And they there's not enough evidence, apparently, through acoustic scientists. There's not enough evidence to show that low frequencies really even give us complete mild symptoms, let alone extreme duress.
Oh, and also with so many people, you'd think, like, somebody probably wouldn't have been that
affected. Someone would have been affected less, and then, like, what is going on?
Unless one of them, I guess, scared everyone else, like...
Right.
I don't know, something's after us, or...
I don't know. But so that's another big theory. Another one, the original theory, even from the investigators, was that they were attacked by the indigenous people up there. But, first of all, they're a very peaceful group of people, and also at the time the Soviet Union really hated them apparently and would find any reason to imprison them, torture them, anything like that. So it was just an easy
scapegoat kind of. Oh, that's fucked up.
But the footprints, they also show that there are only 8 to 9 in that whole area, so if other people were there to attack them, you would have seen Also, the hikers' physical injuries could have not been caused by another human being because the damage done to them suggests a force stronger than human strength. And there was no soft tissue damaged on the outside. Everything that happened was on the inside. So if they got hit, you would have seen a bruise or a cut.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And also, at this point, the indigenous people hadn't even committed a single crime in, like, 30 years. So it was not them. It was not them. So some other theories are that maybe the wind was so strong it blew one of them away and they tried to rescue them.
Oh, God.
But the wind would have also blown away the tent.
Okay, fair.
They think it might have been animal attacks, but there's no animal footprints in the area.
Sure.
And they would have stayed in their tent.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things, again, of, like, they probably have protocol for that.
Right. I mean, I know I would stay in the tent. I don't know if that's right, but...
Em and I would hold hands.
I would hold you. You would hold the vodka. A lot of people literally think that it was a Yeti or an abominable snowman because they are said to be in the Ural Mountains. And in 2014, the Discovery Channel actually, like, twisted an episode into making it sound like a Yeti was involved in the story.
Oh, boy.
There was, on one of their cameras, one of the hikers' cameras, there was a picture of something that could be a Yeti that was, they took a picture, and it was
creepy.
And it was shown on the Discovery Channel, but it could have also been one of the other hikers or one of the indigenous people. But it's so blurry, you can't really tell if it's a Yeti. So
it is creepy. It reminds me of the Panama, the girls who disappeared in Panama with their cameras, and then they looked through the footage later for clues. That freaks me out so much.
Well, one picture suggests maybe a Yeti was involved.
Okay.
But for obvious reasons, I don't think it was a Yeti.
I would hesitate to ascribe that theory.
Yeah. Right. And then and another big theory, which isn't really a theory, it's probably just legitimately what happened because it's common, was paradoxical undressing.
What is that?
Well, have you ever heard of, like, when people die on mountains, they usually find them naked?
Oh, is it like they get hot in the...
Because they're so cold, their brain thinks that they're actually hot, and so they take their clothes off before they die.
I did not know that word for it. What is it?
Yeah, paradoxical undressing.
Oh, my.
So that actually happens to 20 to 50% of people who die of hypothermia, where you remove your clothes in a response to perceived feelings of being burned. Because it's like having snow on you, and it's so cold, it's hot, your whole body feels like that, and so you take your clothes off thinking you're on fire.
I always, clearly I'm an idiot, but I always pictured it as like, oh, your body's protecting you by being like, no, you're nice and warm before you die. I didn't know it felt like burning. I'm like, that makes it worse. Oh, no,
you feel like you're like it's just horrible. Like if you hold an ice cube long enough and your hand, it's so cold, it's hot.
For some reason, I thought it was your brain like shutting down and protecting you. Like, no, we're warm before you die.
It's your brain shutting down.
Yeah, it's the first part.
I think it's your hypothalamus or something like that, but it's whatever regulates your temperature gets confused.
Okay, I understand. I didn't know it was that fucking traumatic. I mean, obviously you're dying of hypothermia, it's traumatic, but I meant I didn't really understand the science behind it. That is fucked up. Okay, great.
Super duper. So
fun fact,
one theory is that's at least why they were naked. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is that although all of them probably had hypothermia in some way or another, a lot of them were wearing each other's clothing, which means that some of them were in their right mind enough to know to layer up.
Maybe they knew
if I feel like I'm on fire, I need to put more clothes on.
Yeah, maybe it was like they know how your body does that, and they were trying to...
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know.
They were like, this is the fucking end game. Like, if I feel like I'm on fire...
More layers.
Yeah. So those are a lot of the most common said theories, but my favorite one is the military conspiracy.
Yeah.
So they think that this entire thing can be explained away with the fact that there was some sort of nuclear testing or UFOs in the area. It's even believed by a lot of the hikers' parents that that it was something involving the military, because even they were not given a lot of information about what happened to their kids. One of them is quoted saying, "What went on up there is hard to say. The families were told you will never know the truth, so stop asking questions." And in those days, because it was the Soviet Union, in those days, in the height of the Cold War, a quote, "If they told you to shut up, you would be silent." So,
yeah.
They were just told, like, you're not going to find out anything. And that could be, you know, it could have really meant, like, you'll never know the truth because we literally don't know.
Jesus.
So stop asking questions and just move on. But it also comes off as, like, if we knew something, we're not going to tell you.
It's like sinister almost, yeah.
Yeah. So the files, like I said, were immediately classified. And once they were accessible in the 90s, post-Soviet era, parts of the files were still missing. Mm. We still don't know what happened to them. So, Lev, who I told you... Mm. Was it Lev or Lev? I think Lev has an I.
I'm going to
say Lev. I'm going to say Lev. Sorry,
yeah,
guys.
I remember him.
So, he's the original investigator from 1959. He even admitted that he was told by his superiors that were high-ranking officials that he needed to stop investigating and not talk anymore about it.
Oh, shit.
And he apparently was super determined to figure out what happened, and they were like, you need to forget about this. So, there's another quote... Relatives, the media, and the public don't hide their suspicions, and something was hidden from them. So everyone kind of knows, but no one's allowed to talk about it, that something fishy happened.
Yeah.
And one guy that became friends with Lev, his name was Oleg. And when Lev passed away, Oleg was the one that inherited his personal archive.
Mm.
So he got to see all the things, all the classified information that Lev knew but wasn't allowed to talk about. And he knew something fishy was going on, and he was told to shut it down and never think about it again. Whoa. But he had kept his archive, I guess, this whole time. So at the same time as the incident, this is some of the information that Oleg found in Lev's archives. At the same time as the incident, many animals were found dead in the area, and locals were suddenly banned from using well water. Also, the indigenous people were banned from the area, and hunting was prohibited for 4 years.
4 years?
Also, all of the bodies, in one way or another, ended up, at least at their funeral, because they had open caskets, and people could see that they had an orange coloring to their skin, their hair had grayed, and they were prematurely aged.
Ugh, what?
Yeah, super fucking creepy.
Their skin was orange, their hair had grayed, and what was the...
They prematurely aged. They looked older than they were.
Oh, God!
And they were all college students. They were, like, in their 20s.
What the frick? That is weird.
Also, fragments of the body's organs were sent to sent out for chemical analysis, and Oleg, in this archive, found that there were signed documentation saying that the organs were successfully delivered, but as soon as the result samples and paperwork came through, a secret lab department came and took them all away.
We don't know.
Another classified piece of information he found was that a lot of the hikers' clothing had high levels of radiation.
Oh, shit.
Also, when the bodies were going to be autopsied, big barrels of alcohol were delivered to the morgue, and that was apparently an old-fashioned way to protect yourself from radiation.
You're kidding.
If you bathed in alcohol first. So...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Also, my favorite thing is that the morgue that the bodies were taken to, according to Lev's personal archive, the morgue the bodies were taken to was surrounded by KGB officers, not police, and nobody was allowed in. And like I said, the incident happened at the height of the Cold War, and some believe that the hikers may have accidentally walked into a nuclear testing site.
Oh, shit.
And the hikers were then shell-shocked in some way by the explosions. They fled the tent, they fell down a ravine, and then animals and natural decomp ate out their organs and
tongue. Sure, sure.
It checks out somewhat because the campsite that they set up on actually was near a Soviet nuclear testing ground that did parachute mine exercises.
Oh my God.
The parachute mines apparently detonate in the air instead of on the ground, and they, quote, cause heavy internal damage with comparably less external trauma.
Oh, well,
which is exactly what happened to them.
There you go.
It might also explain the radiation found on them, also giving them orange skin, gray hair, and prematurely aging.
That's terrifying.
But if this was a military thing, they would have never allowed students and volunteers to be searching in that area.
True.
They would have never let the parents find out that that's where their kids were found.
Yeah.
And only the hikers had radiation on them, not the whole mountain, and fallout would have been everywhere.
Interesting. And also, I'm just thinking, like, why did they let them see the bodies at the funeral if...
Right.
It's kind of weird. Like, wouldn't you think that they would hide that too?
Skeptics think that the morticians actually tried to cover up the frostbite and tried to give them a natural tan, and the makeup was orange.
I was thinking that too. I was like, maybe their bodies were so grayed and frozen.
Yeah. So a lot of people think it was just like the makeup from the mortician that made them orange. Because the only reports are from the funeral where people saw them. Sure.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
Also, only the hikers had radiation on them, like I said. So if the radiation came from the air, they would have all had it, but only some of them showed signs of radiation on their clothing. So it's almost some of them were in a more nuclear area.
But that almost makes it weirder that some of them had it and some didn't, right?
It's almost like some of them, like, up and left and, like, went to a really dangerous area and then came back. Or, like, maybe there was one very, like, a Reddit theory that I found that's maybe the KGB found them on the property, woke them up or cut the tent to tell them to leave. And then they all, like, were filed out, which is why their footprints were so normal. Like, they were almost, like, led out. But then it doesn't explain how they all died in different positions and different distances. So, some think that the testing ground wasn't far away, and the hikers' radiation could have actually just come from drinking contaminated snow from old fallout.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But that means that the contamination was then in the land, and it doesn't explain why they had radiation on their clothes.
Maybe they washed their clothes in it?
Maybe they, like, rolled around in the snow?
Maybe.
Maybe they're doing snow angels.
Maybe vodka, again.
Radioactive snow angels.
Oh, fun.
So, others think that the radiation could have come from the mantles or the fabric bags that came with their lanterns, because in the 1950s, those were slowly being weeded out because they contained thorium, which does emit particle radiation.
Interesting, okay.
So they think it could have just been some of their gear had radiation.
I see.
But it still was a nuclear site that was nearby, and people believe that the hikers maybe saw too much. Around the same time as the incidents, there were other local reports of glowing orange orbs falling from the sky, and some believe that this is either a UFO theory, or they think that these were government experiments that people were seeing, especially because it's such a, like, desolate area. If there were a couple local reports, like, no one's going to believe it, and no one's really ever going to hear about it, so... This was a space to do nuclear testing.
Yeah.
Especially
if they could just tell people, shut up and don't talk about it, and they just won't.
Yeah, especially, you know? Yeah, exactly. And these orbs were seen many times in 1959 by meteorologists, military, and locals.
Wow.
On the same night as this particular incident with the hikers, one other group of hikers reported seeing orange, fast-moving balls, which are potentially rocket missiles. They were quoted saying, "This bright burning object appeared. It was wider at the front and narrower at the back with a tail, and there were sparks flying off of it." And in 1990, before Lev died, he admitted that his team got several reports of fireballs in the sky, and they couldn't figure out a rational explanation for them. But since then, Lev has stated that he thinks the unspecified energy directly caused the skier's death. He's convinced that these fireballs actually are what killed them.
Wow. Okay.
He said, we found that some young pine trees at the edge of the forest had burn marks, but these marks did not have concentric form or some other pattern. There was no epicenter. This once again confirmed that heated beams of a strong but completely unknown energy were directing their firepower towards specific objects, in this case, the hikers.
Hot damn.
And then he even went so far as to say, "I suspected at the time, and am almost sure now, that these bright flying spheres had a direct connection to the group's death."
Whoa.
So, and then he's dead, so, like, no one's ever going to say anything about that, but... I mean, the lead chief investigator says that something fishy, potentially military, was going on up there, and they were just in the crossfires.
Damn.
One fun theory that people have come up with is that some of the hikers were actually KGB operatives, and they were delivering radioactive materials, and so some of the hikers were just collateral damage, but three of them had pretended to go off course so that they could actually get to a trading exchange spot. So they were delivering radioactive materials, and that, which is interesting, is that one of the people named Yuri on this expedition, he actually did work for a nuclear plant 2 years before.
Oh, intriguing. Yuri.
And then they think something went wrong in the handoff, and all of them ended up dying. That's just a random theory.
Oh, my.
But again, no matter how expert you are at being a CIA operative, you would have still left footprints in the snow.
Oh, true. You mean the people that they were meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, true.
We also know that six were killed by the weather, but three still suffered brute force trauma beyond human strength. So it's not a matter of the CIA just, like, shooting everyone.
Right, right.
And so they really don't... Those are, like, the biggest theories. In 1999, the Dyatlov Foundation was founded in 1999 to continue studying the case and maintaining a museum that goes towards trying to figure out what happened. And the most recent update is last February, so almost a year ago today, Russian authorities actually announced that they're going to reopen the case, and they are acknowledging the fact that there are about 75 main theories surrounding the deaths.
75?
At least. Like, those are the ones that
the main ones.
Those are the ones that they started with, and what's shady about it is that CNN has reported that out of those 75 main theories, where all of them have some sort of legitimacy to them, they are only going to pay attention to three explanations, and they're going to ignore the other 72. Mm-hmm. They're only paying attention to three, and they are all three that we've already been able to debunk.
Oh, like, which do we know which ones?
An avalanche.
Oh.
A hurricane. There was...
Wait, what?
All you could literally just type in, like, 1959 weather. Was there a hurricane? No.
Alexa, was there?
And then a snow slab avalanche, where just, like, instead of it cascading down the mountain, there was just a massive clump like of snow of that fell.
So, oh my gosh.
So a lot of people are mad because even though we know none of these are likely possibilities, they're kind of teasing us with like, oh, we're going to figure out the case. But they also might just be covering up the case again with a new reason.
Well, it's frustrating putting money and energy towards that when we know that's not what it was.
Yeah. So it's like, thank you for looking into it, but also you're not looking into it. And then it's like, it still sounds shady because it's like, why are you trying to like turn our heads and make us look at these situations that we know aren't true? Why aren't you paying attention to them?
Like diverting the attention. That's shady as hell. Yeah.
So anyway, that is the Dyatlov Pass.
Amazing. I'm so fascinated. One thought I had, what if it was like, I don't know if this is a thing or not. What if one of the people in the group got like lost, like, what's the right term for it? Like went, kind of lost it and went, you know.
Like went a little wild and killed everyone?
Or just like started reacting in a certain way that scared everyone or like, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, so there are a lot of theories that there was some sort of foul play, but a lot of the like counter arguments.
Like snapped. Sorry. That's the word I was trying to think of.
A lot of the counter arguments are that six of them were never harmed except by the weather. And then the other three, it was still internal blunt trauma with no external damage. So no human could have done that.
So what do you think?
Also, the footsteps show that they weren't running or scared.
Well, what if one of them, like, kind of quote unquote snapped and like cut his way out of the tent or whatever and went off and then they went to try and find him?
Oh.
Like he just was like, I'm done or something. They were like, no, I don't know.
That's a thought.
And then maybe they split up in search parties. I don't know.
I mean, the best part about this is no one knows.
No, it's crazy. These unsolved ones get me good, though, every time, these conspiracies. Do they have any thoughts on what the internal, like how that could have happened, like a fall?
They literally think it had to have been an incredibly high amount of pressure or something crushing them, but they don't have an explanation for it. So they also think that if it were military testing, something with that much radiation they were next to could have done some sort of internal damage.
Okay, got
like, it. Like, I forget which part that I mentioned it, but there was some sort of testing that is known to create internal damage without external signs. So that's why they think that it could have been a military thing, especially because they were so quick to classify everything.
That is just...
Also, his little tongue is sticking out while he's sleeping.
I know.
I just want to pull on it, like taffy.
Little blep.
He's so sweet.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
That was a good story, Em.
Thank you. It's been years in the making. I've wanted to...
I'm so happy you covered it. It freaks me out to this day.
Yeah, I wish I could have ended this with, like, giving you a reason, but...
Well, I mean, maybe someday we can do an update. Yeah. Like Golden State Killer. I mean, that was
something
else. Surprise update nobody expected. Explore new possibilities, pleasure zones, and find your vibe at funlove.com. Funlove.com is a leading online retailer of sensual health and wellness products, offering a wide array of premier brands of toys, lingerie, and accessories. I know I've talked about it before, but we received the most lovely gift basket from Funlove. First of all, I didn't know what it was at first, and then when I pulled out a vibrator, I thought, oh boy, this is not your everyday fruit basket. There was everything, I'm telling you, from sexy perfumes to toys to vibrators to lube. I mean, I gotta say, it's like a one-stop shop, okay? If you go to funlove.com and you're looking for maybe a romantic evening, either with a loved one or with yourself, they've got what you're looking for, I can promise you. So what are you waiting for? Explore, discover, indulge, and make love fun by visiting funlove.com. And if you live in Arizona or Colorado, check out one of their 18 store locations. Hey, maybe I'll stop by when I'm in town.
And for a limited time, you can save 30% off your first order when you use the code DRINK at funlove.com. Head to funlove.com today and use code DRINK at checkout to save 30% off your first order.
Visit funlove.com today.
We all want our cats to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes us happy too. But because we're not mind readers, we don't always know when they're unwell. And cats can be kind of standoffish about sharing their emotions and feelings. So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, so there is no more cat bathroom smell. Hooray! Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust. Plus, the crystals last up to a month, which means less scooping and fewer trips to the garbage can. Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It changes colors to help monitor early signs signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infection and kidney issues. And Pretty Litter ships free right to our door in a small, lightweight bag. This is ingenious, folks. Pretty Litter has been a part of our lives for many, many years. I just think it's the coolest product. It gives you the peace of mind knowing that you can sense something is wrong, depending on the color of the litter. And it's so much easier than going to the store and lugging all that dusty litter home. You know how that goes. And the smell. There's no smell. It's amazing. Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on my cat's health and keeps odors down. You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. Go to prettylitter.com/ATWWD and use code ATWWD to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/ATWWD, code ATWWD to save 20%. prettylitter.com/ATWWD, code ATWWD. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, so this week I am covering a story that was suggested by one of my close friends, one of you all, from Patreon.
Oh, wow.
I did a little Q&A on Instagram Close Friends, and I asked for topic suggestions. I got a lot, including one from M that said, just cancel the story and list the reasons you love me.
Are you going to do that?
Yep. Here, number one. You're okay. Anyway, here's my story.
Good, not great.
You're fine. It's fine.
It's fine.
So somebody named Mags.microbiology, you sound smart, requested this. It's the story of Mark Latunsky and the murder of Kevin Bacon. No, ooh, not that Kevin Bacon. Okay. Actually, I'm going to skip forward and read the line here. The article on heavy.com reads, Bacon is not the actor with the same name, to state the obvious, in like the first paragraph.
Got it.
Because I'm sure that's everyone's first thought.
We could pretend, though. I mean, for the sake of our story.
I think maybe let's not.
Okay.
This is probably not the time to...
I'll find out later.
Ascribe murder to people who are alive.
Sure. I've already done that last episode.
You did already do that. We don't... Yeah. We're just going to stick to the facts.
Jim Belushi and Kevin Bacon are going to come after me.
Can you imagine, though? That would be...
What a story for the grandkids.
What a story. Okay, so anyway, thank you, Mags.microbiology, for the suggestion. This takes place in Swartz Creek, Michigan, which is a suburb of Flint, and this has actually taken place over the last few months, like, literally since, like, November, December.
Oh, really? So it's just, like, 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's extremely current, let's put it that way. So things are kind of still developing, but it's a wild story. So, Christmas Eve 2019, 25-year-old hairstylist Kevin Bacon, not the Kevin Bacon, he's a former hairstylist at Vintage Beauty and JCPenney. He's getting his degree in applied psychology at the University of Michigan, Flint. The night of Christmas Eve around 5 p.m., he tells his roommate, Michelle, that he is going to go out and meet with a man he met on Grindr. A little over an hour later, at 6:12 p.m., Michelle receives a text from Kevin saying he's going to be out for a little while and he's having a good time, so he's not sure when he's coming back. But the next morning, when Kevin didn't show up for Christmas breakfast with his family, his dad was immediately worried because they had plans to get together on Christmas morning, and it was not like him to miss that. And when he couldn't get a hold of him, he called the police and reported him missing.
Gotcha.
Later that day, they found Kevin's car in the parking lot of a plaza near a Family Dollar. Inside the car, police found all of Kevin's belongings, including his clothing, his cell phone.
Oh, boy.
Everything except his car keys was in the back of the car. So,
wow. Okay.
December 27th, so 2 days later, Kevin's family and friends formed search parties to look for him, and...
Wow, I'm sorry. It's just hitting me that it's Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas Day.
Can you imagine Christmas Day? Like, you don't know where someone is and they're supposed to be with you.
Yeah, your own son. And they found his car on Christmas Day, like, with his cell phone in it, which is just...
Wow.
Gut-wrenching, yeah. So they find his car. 2 days later, they organize these big search parties, and his family alerts the media. And at this point, when people start searching, Grindr actually releases a statement that I'm going to read here. We at Grindr are heartbroken to hear about this terrible tragedy and share our condolences with Mr. Bacon's family and friends. While for privacy reasons we do not offer public comment on individual user accounts, we remain fully committed to working with law enforcement in the event of any investigation. And I always think this is interesting because they're trying to develop and figure out the like laws and protocol around like social media and like privacy laws and cell phone records when someone's missing. And
right.
Kevin's dad said he had a really, really, really hard time getting access to Kevin's account because of, you know, privacy reasons and laws and things like that. So they're I think it's just really interesting how probably in 10, 15 years there'll probably be clearer rules on that, but
yeah, we're just living in a nebulous right now.
Yeah, exactly. So around 3 p.m. That same day, the 27th, search parties were looking in the area of Sports Creek Raceway after someone claimed they saw drops of blood in the area. But the search was ultimately called off, yielded no results whatsoever. It was a false lead. The next morning, though, on Saturday, December 28th, police got a tip that Kevin was last believed to have been at the home of a man, 50-year-old Mark Latunsky, in Shiawassee County, Michigan. They didn't reveal how they knew, like how they had gotten this tip, but I think the Washington Post said it was probably in his Grindr app, like maybe his roommate knew who he had met up with. Maybe she was able to open up his Grindr and see who it was, that kind of thing. So they were able to determine that Mark Latunsky is the person he was meeting up with. So they detectives perform a welfare check at Mark Latunsky's home, and he opens the door and he's basically like, "Oh, sure, come on in, take a look around." So this is where shit gets fucked up.
Okay.
So
great.
They enter Mark's home, and at first he's just like, "Come on in," and at first they don't see anything. And then they take a look around and they find a secret room in the basement.
Okay.
That's always good.
Great.
In that room, they found Kevin dead. He was hanging from the ceiling rafters by his ankles.
Fuck.
Completely nude. And Mark Latunsky was immediately arrested, obviously, and he readily admitted to killing Kevin. He said he had stabbed him in the back after they met up, slit his throat, then once he was dead, he tied a rope around his ankles and hung him upside down from the rafters. According to police testimony, he also explained that he used a knife to cut off Kevin's testicles and eat them.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Just a lot. A lot.
Oh my god.
And, like, somewhat unsurprisingly, this was not the first run-in Mark Latunsky had had with the law, believe it or not. Only a few months earlier, and it all happened within, like, so this first one is October, so October 2019 till now, this like weird massive story has occurred, so it's like extremely recent. October 10th, 2019, operators received a 911 call in which a man tells the dispatcher, he's desperately yelling, he says, "I don't know if he drugged me, I woke up in the basement, chained in his basement."
Oh my god.
So he tells the dispatcher a man had been hitting on him at the bus station. They went out for drinks, and the next thing he knew, he woke up in the same man's basement. In a desperate attempt to escape, he said he used a butcher knife to cut the leather strap from his ankle that was connected to a chain, and he was able to flee the house before jumping a fence with the ankle strap still on him, like still attached to him.
Oh my god.
And he jumped a fence, ran to a phone, you know, the nearest like gas station phone he could find. And so so he was from out of town, but police were able to find him, and he said he didn't want to press charges. He told police he didn't want anyone involved. According to Michigan State Police Lieutenant David Kaiser, quote, "Nobody wanted the police there. Nobody wanted to file charges. A lot of times people have a professional life and a personal life. They don't want to intertwine the two. Their personal life is very secret, very protected."
Okay.
So, however, unfortunately, only a month later, a similar incident occurred at the same guy's house, Mark Latunsky, on November 25th, 2019, which I think is like right when Thanksgiving was. So
shit,
yikes,
wow.
He's ruined everyone's holidays.
Oh my god.
November 25th, 2019, a neighbor called 911 to report seeing a man running outside with a bloodied face wearing only a leather kilt with another man chasing him.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Like, what the fuck is going on?
What the fuck? Just the weirdest shit ever. So the police came out, obviously. The young man told authorities he had also been chained up in Mark Latunsky's basement and had gotten away.
How is he not in jail yet? I don't understand.
I'll tell you right now. He said he had become frightened or spooked, and that's why he ran, but everything that happened in the house was consensual, so he did not want to file a police report. And so the two men that had met with him were like, it was all consensual, but they had just, you know, it had gone too far and they ran away, but they didn't want to press charges because what they had originally been doing in their minds was what they had wanted to be doing.
Sure.
So, I mean, obviously things went too far for them, but neither of them wanted to press charges. Let me see. So at this point, since nobody filed a police report, the police were not able to do, like, there was no criminal act, basically. So as law enforcement, there wasn't anything further they could do. Mark, for what it's worth, said he just wanted his $300 kilt back, which is what the guy was wearing. So they gave it to him. After that, they had to just walk away because there was nothing more they could do, nothing to arrest him on. And so obviously now they have something very, very major to arrest him on, which is that he just told everyone he murdered and cut off Kevin's testicles.
And ate them.
So they look into Mark. His social media presence, he had a different name. It was Olikos Kai Lucas. And his social media was full of pictures showing him wearing his, like, $300 kilt. On LinkedIn, he described himself as a self-employed chemist who worked in the barrier residence division of the Dow Chemical Corporation in Midland, Michigan, characterizing the rates of decomposition of polymeric materials. Whatever that is.
Okay.
But he's self-employed, so I don't know what he's doing in there.
Got it. Okay.
He's doing all that in his house, in his secret room? I don't know.
I have no idea.
So his Facebook bio claimed, "Those who really know me call me a straight arrow." Uh-huh, I'm sure they do.
Okay.
"I am a chemist and an experimentalist," one way to put it.
Yeah.
So his photos were all of, like, him in this kilt and kilts. It was, like, his thing, I guess. And there was actually, interestingly, on the article that I read on heavy.com, this Instagram user posted a picture and said, "My mom took this photo. She was at the grocery store and she saw this guy in a kilt and she was, like, chatting with him about the kilt, and they took, like, a photo together and post." And then she's like, months later, I realized, like, that's the guy.
Fuck.
And so she had the photo of her mom with the guy and was like, she ran into him at the grocery store and was complimenting his kilt. And,
oh my God.
Ugh, it just gives me the creeps.
I hope the next person I see in a kilt is not a killer.
I hope so too. Yeah. So that was, like, his thing, you know? He was a straight arrow, quote unquote. Yeah, right. Because he was quickly charged with open murder and bodily mutilation.
Fuck. Okay.
And
awful.
Yes. And despite being so open to letting police into his home, and then he outright admitted that he had killed Kevin, he pleaded not guilty to the charges of murder and dismemberment and mutilation of a body.
Mm.
His attorney is seeking an insanity defense, describing a litany of past mental health issues. For example, according to court records, he was known to stop taking medication prescribed to treat his mental health illnesses, which were described as major depression, paranoid schizophrenia, and traits of a personality disorder in both 2010 and 2012. His defense lawyer claims that he is fixated on a conspiracy theory involving multiple nations/countries and multiple trust accounts, and he also allegedly believes that he is a noble person from the Thomas Clan of Wales, and that the name Mark Latunsky is a cover for his true identity, Edgar Thomas Hill.
Oh, wow. A lot of information I just heard.
Just a big...
Holy shit.
Big,
okay.
That's his, like, real Facebook bio. That's, like, his...
That's... That should be on his LinkedIn for sure.
Yeah, that's, like, his close friend's
bio.
I'm
actually a noble, so.
That's, like, what he tells his close friends on Instagram. Like, you get the real me.
Right. On his Bumble BFF page.
Oh, boy. So that's what his lawyer, allegedly, that's what he believes. This is what his defense lawyer is claiming as part of the insanity defense.
I see.
However, he has been, there were a couple times, for example, in... I forget what year it was, but he was also charged with kidnapping his children and, like, taking them. And the charges were dropped, but he was charged with kidnapping because he had taken his kids away from his their mother and, you know, that kind of thing, like a custody issue. And in all the other cases before this, he had been perfectly fine to stand trial. Like, there was never any mental health defense during those. So this is kind of a new defense. Of course, like, at this point, he's only on trial for the murder of Kevin Bacon. But according to the Washington Post, a dozen detectives and a criminal analyst, this, by the way, gave me major goose cam, are on the case trying to figure out how many people Mark Latunsky has met on Grindr and make sure they contact all of them to see that they're all okay. Because who knows?
It is crazy. There does have to be an algorithm on the back end of, like, every single person that's matched.
Isn't that wild? Yeah.
But it also makes me wonder, like, I'm on Bumble BFF and I've been on Tinder, like, back when I, like, was single. Like,
yeah.
It's like, I wonder who I, like,
yeah,
luckily didn't meet up with.
Well, weirdly, I'm literally thinking of the degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Where it's like the, you know, oh, and that was actually part of that Instagram post was like, you know, they say you walk past 17 serial or murderers in your lifetime and whatever. And this person was like, and my mom like hung out with one at the grocery store.
Right, right, right.
Like you really never know.
Yeah. I mean, I could have run into five of them or run by five of them today, or like I could have been parked behind one. Like you never know.
This is why I don't leave my house. Take a tip from me.
Oh, terrifying.
Yeah, it is. So just be careful who you trust, I guess. Let's put it that way. Look out for number one.
Yeah.
So let's see. So they're looking into who he has matched with on Grindr to make sure everyone is okay and there aren't any other, you know, unknown victims who are maybe missing persons, that kind of thing, because who knows, this might lead to other, I mean, hopefully not, but this might lead to other connected disappearances. And the case is obviously ongoing, so we don't know yet if anything's been found, but it hasn't been released yet. I will let you know if it is. Actually, you guys will let me know probably on Twitter, and then I'll let you know back on the show.
Yeah.
Kevin Bacon's funeral was held last month, Friday, January 3rd, in Swartz Creek, Michigan.
Wow. I don't think you've ever told a more topical story of
recording,
his funeral was last week.
We're recording this February 4th, so it was, yeah, so it was January 3rd, so it was a month ago.
Oh, January 3rd. Wow. Still. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's 1 month ago. It's really, really dark. Yeah. They held a candlelight vigil later that night. Kevin's loved ones made banners. They brought balloons. Friends painted the Flint Rock in his honor. According to those who knew him, Kevin had a love for family, friends. He had cats, two cats named Smokey and Fuzzy. He had a dog named Hannah, and he loved doing makeup and hair. And then his roommate, Michelle, the one who was kind of the last person to talk to him and see him alive, described him beautifully on, I think it was an Instagram post. She wrote, "Kevin could brighten up any room he walked into. He loved talking about hair, makeup, fashion, and music. He loved Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, and Jeffree Star. He was amazing at making vivid hair colors look great and was passionate and creative about his hair work. He loved the color Tiffany blue with a passion. He loved getting tattoos. He also loved his friends and family so much. He came to my band concerts at MSU and while I was in the marching band. He came to my senior recital and was my own personal hairstylist, even dyeing my hair the night before as a graduation gift. We were always able to vent to each other. He was always so empathetic and gave great advice and perspective when I needed clarity. He was like my own personal therapist. I remember asking Kevin not too long ago what his dreams were, if there were no limitations and he could be anything. He said he wanted to be a hairstylist for the runway and wanted to work as a hairstylist in a major salon in a big city. I believe he fully could have accomplished those dreams. He was so creative."
Aw, that's really sad.
Yeah. And
you know what's also wild is like, thinking this only happened a month ago, like,
yeah,
this sounds really pragmatic and not emotional or practical, not very emotional, but like that person is like probably still looking for like a new roommate, and like there's like other things like still happening after the fact,
like the ripples are still very strong in their lives right now.
And like I mean, usually when we tell stories, it's like I kind of in my brain, maybe it's not true, but at least for comfort I can tell myself like, oh, it happened a while ago, and maybe the grieving process isn't as intense, but like right now, like people, like someone's son died last month.
This is like very real right now.
Holy shit.
I know, and that makes it so, it brings it back into like reality rather than just like a story, and that's why also like I wanted to just read that, because I know a lot of the articles have been like about the killer and he wore this crazy kilt and he had whatever mental illness, and it's like, you know, obviously that's a big part of the story, but I feel like
that just happened. Guy, like there's so many people suffering right now because of this. Wow. Yeah.
And I think it's worth talking about him more than it is about the man who killed him.
Mm-hmm.
So as of the date of the research, which was early February, the most recent news articles I could find with updated information were from last week. So end of January. So that was like the most recent updates. As of now, Latunsky is scheduled to undergo competency and forensic valuations to determine his competency to stand trial. And that's kind of what I was saying in a much less coherent way earlier, that in the past he's been found competent to stand trial at his other criminal hearings, but he's undergoing that right now as well. He will be moved from the Shiawassee County Jail to the Center for Forensic Psychiatry for evaluations. And this process could take 60 to 90 days, if not longer. Apparently, there's like also a big delay right now in transferring people. And so they outright said to the media, like, this might be delayed. Currently, the court sessions are on hold until the report is submitted. So it might be a while till we get another update. Latunsky's lawyer claims that he seems to truly believe the grandiose stories he's been telling his attorney. Then again, it's his attorney saying that, so who knows?
Right.
But at his arraignment hearing on December 30th, for what it's worth, Latunsky said that no, he was not Mark Latunsky. He was Edgar Thomas Hill, and Mark Latunsky was his nephew. So that's where things have started. If Latunsky is found not competent, he will be hospitalized in a lockdown facility and he will be treated for his mental health concerns until he is deemed competent to stand trial. And perhaps the weirdest aggressive turn that my research took, where I was reading these articles and all of a sudden I was like, huh, is that Mark Latunsky's house is now up for sale.
Okay.
The one where Kevin's body was found.
Oh.
Apparently it has been foreclosed on and will be up for auction this month on February 26th. So, just a heads up if you're in the area, I guess.
Wow. Oof. Goose cam.
I know. It's so weird. And again, it's like the same thing. It's like
the ripples.
Yeah. Cause they have to, it's a house now. It's an empty house. They have to, they're going to sell the house. Like
also they're going to sell the house and people who are interested right now are going to be like, oh, 60 days ago, someone was killed here and their testicles were taken off and eaten.
Yeah, so this is actually
60 days ago.
Interestingly enough, this is what the article was talking about. Basically, the article was saying the house is up for sale and yes, someone will buy it. And well, first I'll read the property. So the property records show that Latunsky purchased the home for $80,000 in May 2001. And later that year, he applied for a permit to build an 8x20-foot living space in the basement.
So he's been kind of into this for that entire time then.
That is a good point. This was 2001.
So for like 18, 19 years.
Oh my God, you just gave me like the biggest creeps. I hope
so,
they
like, these are the only ones that he's found since like social media dating came out.
Somebody do some more research. Holy shit.
They should check like emails and Reddit and shit. Like things that have been going on since before Tinder.
Newspaper classifieds. I don't even know.
Yeah, there's probably been a lot more
scary
death. He's probably just lucky. He got caught on so many.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. He's been fantasizing something since 2001.
Yeah. Yeah. But the last two, apparently it was just plain old BDSM and they wanted to be part of it. So, you know, maybe
it was just a sex dungeon.
Maybe. And maybe he just got to a point where he finally acted out what he had been, you know,
concocting.
So who's to say, but we do know one thing that happened down there and it was very tragic and very terrible. Scott Myers, who's a realtor based in Genesee County, said there's a buyer for every property. It will 100% sell. I was like, okay. Also apparently in Michigan, you are not required to disclose if someone has been killed or has died in the property. And, however, they said anyone who Googles this house, it's going to be just articles. So like,
sure.
They're going to know. Like,
yeah, if you plan on moving into a house, just look at the history first.
Yeah.
Cause you could be going to a place where it's not expected that they tell you.
Yeah. I mean, and he was basically, yeah, that's a good point. And he was basically saying, you know, they're going to know. Everyone's going to know. It's in the news. This is a small, really tiny town. Like they know what happened.
Right.
Grindr also, for what it's worth, released tips for those using their service. So I'm just going to read those. They said, always meet up in a public space. Let people know where you will be and with whom. And if something uncomfortable or strange happens, contact police. The company says, quote, give them all the facts. If you do not report this person, he in all likelihood will do it again to someone else. So be safe out there, folks. Be safe out there.
Yeah.
It's a scary world sometimes, and the fact that this is so recent is, like, really gut-wrenching.
I mean, it's everything our parents warned us of.
Yeah.
Of, like, don't meet people online, and that's exactly what we do now.
Yeah, and I mean, for 99.9% of the time, it's perfectly safe, and happy things happen, and we make friendships and relationships, but you never know. There's some creeps out there who will take advantage of you, so... I did want to add the sources I used were Heavy.com, Click on Detroit, WNEM Channel 5 News, WILX Channel 10 News, The Washington Post, USA Today, and Newsweek. And that is the murder of Kevin Bacon. And thank you, Mags Microbiology, for the suggestion.
Yeah, wow.
Whew.
Lots of stuff going on
that
there.
That is a dark one.
Yeah.
And very recent.
Maybe it'll be an update on that one, too.
I know, because it's the trial hasn't happened yet, so I'm curious to see, like, what...
What happens?
This is probably the most recent story I've ever covered, like, as of the release of the episode, you know?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Whew.
Let's hope we get some answers, and let's hope this guy goes to jail, I guess, or gets treated.
In happy news, Gio just woke up from his nap.
And went right back to sleep.
His tongue is still out of his mouth. But he looked like that whole time you were telling the story, he was running with some great squirrels.
Yeah, he was. At least he's having a good time.
Thank you, guys. For those of you who want to see more, learn more, hear more, we have a website, and that's whatyourdrink.com.
Yes,
we also
do.
Have our Patreon, ATWD Podcast.
If you want to tell me which story to do, we're taking Patreon suggestions on Instagram, close friends.
Yes.
Also, we have a live tour going on right now, and that's whatyourdrink.com/live.
We have merch.
Oh, yeah. ATWWDmerch.com.
We have a P.O. box if you want to send us presents.
No human body parts, please.
No human body parts. That is, oh my God, I can't remember.
1920 Hillhurst Ave, number 265, Los Angeles, California, 90027.
Yes.
And also just email us, and that's whatyourdrink@gmail.com. If you have any personal stories, any suggestions, any kind words, you can say mean things, but I'm really going to cry. So be nice.
Yeah, don't be mean.
Okay.
And that's it.
That's it, guys. We love you and come to our tour.
And
that's
why
we
drink.